powered by a 100% Australian electricity and gas retailer. That's Red Energy. Switch today. The all-new BMW X5. Now at Doncaster BMW. This is Waitley on SEN.
Victor Drago, son of Ivan Drago, who infamously killed Apollo Creed, appeared today to issue a challenge to Adonis Creed.
Don't do this.
I ain't got a choice.
That's the same thing your father said. You'll die right here in my hands. That kid was raised in hate. It's dangerous. He broke things in me that ain't never been fixed. It ain't worth it.
Our story begins in the Ukraine, where Ivan Drago lives in exile, raising his son on the hard-bitten streets with the sole intention of extracting revenge for the events of 33 years ago and reclaiming his place in Russian society. That opportunity presents when Adonis Creed fulfills his destiny by becoming the heavyweight champion of the world, the title held by his father Apollo and his mentor Rocky Balboa. But he feels like a champion without a legacy. And to that end, the Dragos arrive in Philadelphia to issue the challenge and confront the past. Rocky tells Adonis not to take the fight. Adonis takes the fight. Rocky refuses to be part of it. Adonis gets brutalized. The Dragos get fated in Russia. Adonis recovers. The rematch is booked in Russia. Rocky returns to Creed's side. Adonis goes into the desert to train. Oh, on fight night, the odds are stacked against Creed.
Bias.
You can guess what happens in the fight. There's a bit of every Rocky movie drawn into this.
That's a positive.
And it's off to various grave sites to make sense of it all. That's Creed 2. Oh,
Bob, come on. You cannot stand here and look me in the eye. That tone you used is very, very different. We've done quite a few of these now.
Yeah.
You've lost your sunshine.
No, I was so disappointed watching this. Because this is some of the richest source material. Like, you can nearly not muck this up. And they mucked it up.
Well, I'm going to roll out the rubber tire and lay it down between us and ask you to put your foot into it, and I'll do the same. We should go toe to toe this morning.
Did you see Creed 2? 1-300-736-736. Did it deliver? Did it utilise all that it had on offer? 0433-98-1116. V was the first one through. Creed 2 delivered in spades. Haven't seen Creed 2. To me, it looked eerily similar to the penny grabbing of Police Academy 6 and American Pie 30. Maybe Bob will change my mind. So much reheating of old soup. We've seen it all before. Rinse, dry, repeat. I'm not anti-reheating old soup.
No, that's part of the shtick of the Rocky franchise. We are into, how many is this now? We're up to, this is the seventh.
We have five, two strays, Creed and Creed 2.
So what?
Nine.
Yeah, we're up to nine.
Can I just want to... I'm not sure our people in charge of Creed 2 have watched the whole lot of them.
Right, okay.
I think there's a couple of
Johnny come late, Rocky come latelys.
So why did it work for you?
Because it you're going to get used to the word today, homage.
Yes.
So this is the Rocky, and Rocky 4 of all the Rockies was the most ludicrous, the most pumped up on steroids, metaphorically and literally.
It was six video clips stitched together in one of the most enduring movies of our childhood.
Yes.
And the greatest piece of movie propaganda
ever to come out.
Yeah.
Now, the original Creed was like relaunching. It was like the original Rocky. It had grit and sort of reality to it.
It was excellent.
This is the sister movie to Rocky IV. It was an homage to itself.
Yep.
Now, if that sounds self-congratulatory, that's because it was intended that way.
Yeah, and I was totally up for that, except I think they ruined it.
In what?
Step at a time. So what is it? A punch at a time, a step at a time, and a round at a time. That's what we will do here. Okay. So there are spoilers all over this for what it's worth, but I honestly don't think we're spoiling anything. The joy in watching is supposed to be the nostalgia.
Yep.
I think you know how it unfolds. Yep. Shane's on the road, so we'll mix and match with you as well. Shane, welcome.
How you going, guys?
Good.
Good, Shane.
Well,
I watched it on the plane back from Phuket two nights ago, and I thought, I've been waiting for this to come out, you little ripper. I watched it, and I thought it was the greatest piece of rubbish, and up there with Rocky V. But the thing that really disappointed me was the CGI fight scenes.
Which ones bothered you?
The CGI'd fight scenes.
Yeah, have you got a specific one in mind?
The last fight, okay. Period. I mean, if you have a look at Rocky in all of his movies, or Sylvester Stallone in all of his movies, he actually, in the first three, they, you know, collected punches. There wasn't many that didn't actually hit, if you watch all these documentaries. In this, it was full CGI.
I think if we really go out, that's a great call, Shane, but if we really went in and dissected the fights, the major issue is they're not very good fighters. They don't know how to defend. One of those punches, fight over.
Yeah.
Sorry. So
there's a lot of fight.
Don't look sort of directly at the fights.
I'm with you. I'm not digging
into that
level.
It's like WWE. Like that's...
Yeah. So Pete's on the road. Pete, welcome.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. One question and a couple of points. Firstly, I think the Rocky saga will go on as long as Sylvester Stallone is alive, because I think as long as he's alive, you'll write about grandkids, great-grandkids, yeah, et cetera. It'll be a whole thing. And I'm just wondering from Bob's perspective, because the original Rocky IV had a great soundtrack, at least. That's what its redeeming feature was. They'd also rehashed Eye of the Tiger on that. I'm just wondering whether Bob, given his newly found musical talents, will be writing a piece that will help sell the current Rocky.
I don't know if the Creed franchise needs clunky folk music. I like the soundtrack. I like the sort of hip hop. This is Adonis sort of taking the baton. So yep. The soundtrack for me was bang on.
All right, so maybe, and none of this is directed at you, but maybe you can counsel me through it, okay? So the whole movie's, this should be Drago's movie.
Yep.
Like there's way too much time spent on Creed and the birth of his child, and this is Drago's movie. It's the sequel to Rocky IV.
So I counter that with, every time Drago is in it, were you captivated by him?
I've got 2 points on that. I was unfulfilled. The scene in the restaurant where Drago comes. So first of all,
what did you want him to have a fight?
No, but I wanted a little bit more out of it. So the Dragos arrive like Hans Gruber and his crew in Die Hard. Like they look like they will be terrorists rather than.
Well, it's an American movie with Russians.
And they stand at the top of the Philadelphia steps, and there's Rocky's statue.
The disdain.
That totally works for me.
Yes.
This has been 33 years. He had his life ruined by that fight. I get that. He goes and waits in the restaurant. Rocky walks up behind him and goes, "Is that you?" Good start.
Great.
But then I want De Niro and Pacino from Heat.
So you want
more?
I
didn't get that.
Okay. Well, I acknowledge that because anytime those two came together, the tension felt real. Now, I'm not sure if either of them are the best actors in the world, but when they were close to one another, the tension was irresistible. So I too would have wanted more of that, but I'm sort of tantalized by that.
Okay.
It didn't, because there was a deleted scene where they have a push and shove.
In the restaurant?
I think so. Okay. God that didn't happen.
My main problem with the whole movie, the only reason to make the movie is to get the moment between Drago and Rocky around the last fight. So they made the movie, and I think the director forgot to go around the edit suite and go, "Who's got that scene? Who's got the scene between Rocky and Drago at the last fight? Who's got that?" Like it was terrible. They only barely stared at each other once. You go, this is the whole purpose. No, there had to be a scene that offered some form of closure between Rocky and Drago. That's the only purpose of the movie, in my opinion.
Well, you know, this is about one of the questions I've got here is what's next. Are the Dragos gone again? Do we never see them again? Because I think they're going back for another dip.
I think there's more there.
I think, you know, that the final, right at the end where they show them running.
Yeah.
That wasn't a goodbye.
No.
I don't think. I think that was,
see you next
we
time.
Might get, the next one might be called Drago.
I'm up for the Drago.
Oh, yeah.
Movie. I was unfulfilled.
You were unfulfilled.
From that, because that was, I was in it for what happens. But I also think they slightly... So Drago is sees himself as the victim.
Yeah.
He killed Apollo. Yeah. So, yes, Rocky did ruin his career.
Yes.
But he killed Apollo, but and that doesn't, he seems to have forgotten that he killed Apollo.
Jared, you're not an eight-year-old child of the baddies of the baddies and the goodies of the goodies. This is how it's evolved, and this is proper filmmaking of Drago isn't all bad, and the Dragos were jilted. But, yes, he also killed his friend, and, yes, as he walked out of the restaurant, he points to Apollo and he says, nice photo. That is cold, even for a Russian heavyweight. Potential ex-husband of a spy, that is cold.
Okay. The most unforgivable moment of the movie was in the final fight, and they do it again. So this is the worst piece of propaganda ever committed to a film out of the US, is the Politburo standing and applauding for Rocky and all the connotations that had to the Cold War. Like, that's outrageous.
They did
it again. The commentary was the Russian crowd is cheering for the American boxer. No, they should. You cannot do that.
I'm going to take,
not in 2019.
I'm going to take my foot out of the tire for that one. I got to lay down on that. Look, I'm a fan of this movie. I'm a fan of how they put a lot of things across. That is indefensible. That is, I cannot. It was appalling however long ago, 25 years ago. It was pretty bad again.
It was terrible.
The Russians are flip-floppers. They're crowds.
Stuart's on the road. Hello, Stuart.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Good, Stuart.
Yeah, I don't know, the thing I first thought of was, as if anyone had ever get those two in the ring, Drago was way bigger.
So this is another problem I reckon you've hit on well here, Stuart, is there's no way Adonis Creed's the heavyweight champion of the world.
No, he looks, what would he be, a middleweight?
And they don't do enough to sell the start of the movie that he has progressed to be the guy.
Yeah.
And then, so he's the heavyweight champ, right? Yeah. He goes out into the desert with Rocky. He is the heavyweight champion of the world, and he arrives anonymously in this desert camp. And his test to be ready is to stand in a tie with a fat bloke. And when he can punch the fat bloke, he's ready to go and defend the title. No.
You know,
and that's when they said he's a 25-1 underdog going into the fight in Russia.
We both know there's a lot of questions in this movie, and one I've got written down here. Is the fat guy in the tire, is he the next challenger? Because they seem to celebrate. He beat Donnie up there for a little while, then
he's supposed to be the heavyweight champion of the world. He looks like only a vaguely competent lightweight.
I'm so disappointed you haven't embraced the fantasy of this. I mean, just the idea of a training facility 2 hours in the desert, man, it's just logistically very, very awkward.
Like, if they flip this to be Die Hard 5 between the desert camp and the Dragos arriving in Philadelphia, I think that's nearly there.
Did the desert camp get you, though? I mean, put aside, and this is what I'm asking of you today. Yes, this is like, and you're a wrestling fan.
Yes.
Put your intellect just aside for one moment. Did it get you? Did it go to your heart? Were you in the desert? Were you in Palm Springs going, I wanted to start doing sit-ups?
No, so I wanted him to run up the icy mountain and shout, Drago!
So you didn't want homage to Rocky IV. You wanted Rocky
Just
IV.
Just do it all.
you didn't think you went close enough.
James is in Macedon. Welcome, James.
G'day, Jared. I just wanted to make one comment about Creed 2. And maybe more in reference to what you just said earlier about Drago being the victim. I think that the perspective is slightly different. I think Apollo Creed fought on his own demise with the careless nature that he attacked that fight with Drago originally in Rocky IV, and cost himself his own life in addition to Rocky not throwing him a towel. So I think there is a perspective there that Ivan Drago was a victim in Rocky IV.
Interesting point. Interesting point. So Ivan Drago is the great white shark. Apollo, don't hop in the ocean. Kind of then to go, we'll find the shark. It's like you came into his world, bang,
James,
all over.
That's excellent. Well done. 1-300-736-736. After the break, the return of Ludmilla. And I will say, is this they got spot on. Yeah. Just a reminder to everyone, Creed isn't a true story. That's from Ollie from Greensboro, who's playing along with us. Well, we're just looking into Creed 2, whether it delivers. We're a split jury here. There's a couple of different things that are from the DVD release, from the Blu-ray release. There's a 5-minuter with Dolph and Sly,
which is like, this is the stuff that should have been in the movie.
So
it was
scenes or no interview?
Interview. So this is a little snippet from that.
What's special about Creed 2 and how'd you come up with that story and how is that going to add to this franchise?
I thought you just didn't lose the fight. You lost the country, you lose your wife. And I don't think you ever get over a loss like that. And you're about to embark on a rebirth through your son. So you've raised this kid in a culture of hatred. Rocky also, I mean, it's a father's and son story. It's really all three different elements. Adonis has his awakening, I do, and then you do.
No, it's a beautiful story, and I think people will appreciate it on a deep level.
I think so.
It should have been so much better.
I agree wholeheartedly with both of those gentlemen.
Harry is in Oakley. Hello, Harry.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Another Rocky tragic, if you ever ask me. The Rocky series is my favourite, but there are some clear mistakes that they've made in this movie, because in the first Creed, he's gone from light heavyweight, and all of a sudden in the second, he's gone to heavyweight, but he's fighting the same guy that he lost his Mustang to that was a light heavyweight champion. So what did they both go up a category? So it was really confusing in that area. But, you know, I just wanted to mention something about Rocky IV, where the guy said that there's an element of Drago being the victim.
Yep.
We're all forgetting Duke screaming into the other side of the corner where he says, "This is supposed to be an exhibition." So, you know, there was no element of this guy went in there to kill it. And, Rocky IV was great. But, you're right about the scenes in the desert where he's fighting and, you know, he's fighting the fat guy. I had the same thoughts as well. I'm sitting there going, so that's how you train to fight a monster like Drago? This thing does not make any sense. Still love it, though, for the romanticism
that's
of it.
Say that.
There are two deleted scenes. One, there is a scene in the hospital where Rocky and Drago go at it, which has been deleted from there. And
thank
there's
God.
A scene right after the actual in the locker rooms at the end of the movie where Creed actually comes out and he sees Drago sitting there, and he goes over to him and speaks to him and tells him that one fight does not define him as a person. So they have this special moment, I suppose, fighter to fighter. And then there's that last scene of Drago with Rocky sort of just nodding at each other like, you know, it's over. So, that should have been in the movie, I believe. But there's a few inconsistencies there. And the main one when I saw was, hang on a second, he's fighting Wheeler, but Wheeler was a light heavyweight champion. How did you all of a sudden that both go up a category? Like, it makes no sense to me.
It's a house of cards, Harry. Brilliant.
I just turn your attention to Rocky IV and the weight difference there, where Rocky's coming in about 67 kilos and Drago's 167.
Yeah, but that's that's not a real fight. He has to abandon the title to go.
Right.
So a couple of things to deal with here. Rocky's financial state, which we'll get to in a moment, and there are heaps of calls here, so everyone's up.
There's questions.
Bridget Nielsen's reappearance in the movie.
Yep.
So the Dragos are welcome back into Russian society after the events halfway through the movie. There's an empty seat at the long dining table, and in walks Ludmilla. That's a good moment.
That was a great moment. They just make her look like such a villain. She plays that sort of villain role. But this is to the heart of it. This is Drago's redemption. He lost his soul. In Stallone's words, you know, he loses the fight, he loses country, he loses dignity, he loses his wife. So it's about his redemption. He came crawling back very quick, Ivan Drago.
Yep.
And he needed her approval, and he wanted her back, and he wanted Russia's love. And Victor sort of, he storms away. What was all, you know, he's been brought up on hate, but then it sort of reveals itself that this is much more about Ivan.
When you first saw Bridget Nielsen, what did you think?
I thought, this is a body double. That's not her. I thought they'd done a good job of moving someone in who wasn't the original actress, and then Googled it, and to my shock, and
it's her.
I was like, it's her! It is actually her. We need sort of like what happened behind the scenes. Were her and Stallone? They weren't on the set together. Surely
they were.
They were.
She was pregnant, as it turns out.
Oh,
and they had.
Wow.
So they've always remained professional where needs be, and they had a moment where he said he was happy for her, and then they went to their Russian and American corners. That's art imitating life right there. Josh is in Eaglemont. Hello, Josh.
Yeah, I want to stick up for this film. Forget the negatives.
Thank you,
this
Josh.
This is why it worked for me. When Drago threw in the towel at the end, and now I'm a 38-year-old man, a little tear forced itself out of my eye.
This is a complex man.
And that just broke my heart. And this is the other reason why it worked. I'm 38. I'm not really Joseph, not in good nick. And I went for an 8K run. I felt compelled. I had to go for an 8K run until everything in my body just about broke.
Yep.
And there has not been a movie for a long time that has made me cry and run 8Ks in a long time. Forget everything. That's why this worked.
Good well on you, said. Josh.
So Drago, as a father, is everything that he shouldn't be, and then at the end he figures it out. And his last words to Victor in the movie are, it's okay.
It's all good.
And then the next time we see them, they're running together.
They're running again.
And in that three-second clip is... there's a lot stitched into
this
that.
This is a complex family.
Yeah, very good. Ben's in North Bourne. Ben, welcome.
G'day, boys. Bob, don't worry.
G'day, Ben.
Jared's now become deliberately disingenuous.
He's a hater.
He knows as a sporting fan as well as any of us that there are so many light heavyweights who try their hand at heavyweight boxing. Come on, it's one division up. Manny Pacquiao won world championships in seven different weight divisions.
Can you help me with this, Ben? Why did the fight have to be in Russia, take it or leave it, when Adonis was the champ? You'd go, well, thanks, I'll leave that.
That's cheap. You know we've got no comeback for that. It's ridiculous. And they put up zero fight. Like, oh, it's got to be... We want the fight in Russia. That's the way it's got to be. Whoa. Adonis is the champ.
Yeah. If you want to fight for the belt, we're not doing it in Russia.
You've had four fights, Victor. You get what you're given, pal.
Terrific, Ben. Thanks for joining in. All right, Rocky's financial state. So Rocky is a hugely popular figure in Philadelphia. The setup is that everyone runs the steps and that the statue is always surrounded by people.
Yeah.
But no one goes to his restaurants and he lives in squalor.
If people are listening in Philadelphia right now, get down to Adrian's. Looks like they lovely little restaurant. Get down there. What happened? Rocky IV, Rocky is loaded. Driving, there's Porsches.
Yeah, and in the, a robot.
Yeah. So what happened? Did he, I know we ignore Rocky V.
Yep.
Did he lose all his money in, was it a pyramid scheme gone bad? I don't know. Something happened. Something really drastic happened.
Yep.
And Donnie's like, oh, I look after you now. It's like, yeah. Rocky's living in his original house.
Mm.
Hopefully he's got a phone now.
Can't even get the light changed on the porch.
He caught the train from Philly to Los Angeles to visit him.
He's missed
3 days on the train. He's a cancer survivor.
He's missed the nostalgia market, Rocky.
What happened?
Who's still a phenomenally popular figure. And every time he's at a fight, he's revered. Where was his cut from Donnie's previous fights?
Yeah,
Donnie's the world champion.
Yeah.
He's sling a pay-per-view
him a few bucks,
king.
Donnie.
Where's his percentage?
Is Donnie tight?
Well, he must be.
He must be.
All right. What do you want to run through?
A quick one, because we've got a really big one to get to. But did you notice, for the title fight, the final fight, Rocky's in the corner. He's wearing a cardigan. Rocky. I know you're hard up.
Me by. Yep.
Okay. This is my big one, though.
Yep.
Did they exhume Adrian's corpse and move her grave? It looks in a different location.
You're pretty sure about this.
Well, it doesn't look right. There's now a river running past on a different angle.
So I'm going to add to that. When did Rocky and his son fall out again?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Because that got resolved at the end of Rocky Balboa rather beautifully in its final scene. And they're estranged again. So... has the movement of Adrian's grave been the source of the new estrangement between the two?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was an unnecessary little wrinkle, as our man Bill Simmons would call it. The film didn't need Rocky and the son estranged. I don't know why it was in there. I don't know how they've become estranged. But if they exhumed Adrian's coffin, that is more unforgivable than the Russians turning again mid-fight on their own.
All right, what do you got?
What have I got? That's we've.
You're happy?
Yeah, that's it.
How many stars?
It's a 4-star Rocky movie.
two stars. It should have been four stars.
Oh, that's
such good material to work with.
That's so
did you want to do Brownlow votes?
Yeah, do you want to go Brownlow? I'm going to start. You got to go last time.
Yep.
Three Drago, easily. Every time he was on the, he lit up the screen. I just wanted, we both wanted more, but he, every time he was there, I loved the complexity of his character, that there was a tenderness, but there was also, he's still a cold-hearted bastard. Two, Rocky. I really like Rocky as the role player now. I think he's really found his spot there as not the main guy, but just on the side. And I've given one to Donnie because he's carrying this new franchise.
Yep.
There's not the absolute love for him that was always going to be unattainable. But I think he's carrying it pretty well.
Yep. Three Drago.
Yeah.
But should have been entrusted with more. Two Ludmilla. could have done more. And one, Apollo's wife is excellent.
Oh, she was Donnie's my honourable mention. Yeah, she was fantastic.
Yeah.
How do you the love story with Donnie and her Bianca?
No, just like
too
give
much.
Me the Dragos,
not
the Creeds.
I like their relationship though. I think Bianca's character is interesting.
Yep.
I think it sits nicely, but yeah, I think they're setting us up for more Dragos.
I hope so.
So I've got a question for you. We've got time. Quick question.
Yep.
What's next? Do we get more Drago? Do we get Clubber Lang? Oh, Clubber Lang Jr., imagine. Or does Rocky die in the next one?
Yeah, well, is Stallone prepared to do that in the Mickey moment?
I think he dies.
Okay.
I think that's what we're...
I do like the idea of Clubber Lang.
Oh. Son. Little Mohawk coming in.
Very good. All right, that's a little look at Creed 2, our... Every week, always a nod to Bill Simmons, the inspiration for looking back at some sports movies and having a little bit of fun along the way. We'll straighten up with some footy next. The cricket has taken a really good turn for Victoria. They've got New South Wales 3 for 16, so bowled out for 194 at the start of day three. New South Wales still need a further 150, now with 7 wickets in hand. So Victoria getting through early. New South Wales 3 for 16. Let me see who's taken those wickets. Siddle, Pattinson and Pattinson, Hughes, Larkin and Enriquez, all ducks. All ducks. So New South Wales in trouble as they push for an outright. There's a stack of messages. We'll give you a little touch of those. We'll work through some of the footy next. Bob is here for McCafe Coffee and Ham and Cheese Pocket for just $6. It's Melbourne's Membership Days. Show your support. Call 1-300-DEMONS. Sign up today and receive 2 bonus tickets and a cap.
Powered by a 100% Australian electricity and gas retailer. That's Red Energy. Switch today. The all-new BMW X5. Now at Doncaster BMW. Want to have your say? Ring Jared now on 1300 736 736. Now, back to Waitley.
Next Rocky movie must include Clubber Lang. He wore a Cardi because his original trainer Mickey wore a Cardi. Rocky didn't give Mickey a cent. It's come back to bite him. Paulie loses all Rocky's money to bad investments.
They could all be true, actually.
I don't think Jared is giving the movie the credit it deserves. It's a popcorn movie. Simply sit back and enjoy. It's not an after-dinner discussion movie. Talking about their weight and what they were wearing is akin to critiquing Green Book and slamming it on how pizza is supposed to be eaten.
Yes.
This is all about nostalgia. That's and whether right. it hits the right
time. I look directly at it.
On a footy front, Damien Barrett's conversation with Paul Marsh from the Players Association on the drugs policy. So the PA has long said this is a welfare policy. It has theoretically punitive measures. The AFL balances what they call welfare with accountability. You can't get a second strike. This is the podcast, the In The Game podcast out of AFL.com.
Part of this is you actually get an understanding of the levels of usage, so that gives you a good indication of you know whether the player may have an issue or not, whether it's a one-off or whether it's a consistent pattern. And when there's a consistent pattern, then that's when you start having conversations with doctors, with psychs. And
but doesn't a consistent pattern mean that there's been more than one strike, to use that word in inverted commas?
No, but
a consistent pattern would suggest to me that there's regular
use. But this is on public record, is that a player who goes into the program then will keep being tested, but they aren't able to be. There's no further strikes at that point. Now, that's my point. Yeah, I know it is your point.
So don't say it's a two-strike policy then. Well, why don't we change the messaging around that? It's as many strikes as there needs to be to fix the play, which I think is a sound ideology, but it's not a two-strike policy in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't really care what we call it. I don't care. What I do care about is we're helping the players. So, you know, if you want to call it something else, call it something else. But from
you see my point, though? I mean, you just admitted there that there are players who record consistent drug use, and you're telling me it's a two-strike policy.
But it's not a punitive policy. It's a medical model. Otherwise, we're not agreeing to it, right? Mm. So that's what it is. I don't even know where it started, the whole three-strike versus two-strike. I don't even know where that came from. But the reality of it is that under certain circumstances, if a player gets two positive tests, they'll be outed, there'll be a suspension, there'll be a fine.
But they won't be, though. You just said they won't be.
No, I didn't say that. I said if they're under the medical model.
Yeah.
If they're under the medical model. And this is what it's about. It's, you know, I don't know why we have this fascination with wanting to catch and out and penalise versus actually identify and help. That's what we're trying to do. And we're not going to walk away from that. And I don't know, you know, smart people should get that. That's actually what
I think
we're
trying
to do.
I think we get it. But why don't we just say it's a code of conduct rather than a policy? Because a drugs policy determines athletes who are doing something they shouldn't be doing. And there is a sanction attached to that, at least in a public sense.
I reckon you're really focusing on the semantics of this versus actually the principles of what the policy is.
Paul Marsh with Damien Barrett on the In The Game podcast. Are you surprised to hear it stated so clearly that really the chances of getting two strikes are not there?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised. I think both of them made really good points. Damien asked really the right questions. And I think Paul made some really good points as well. But we do get to the, it's still a bit misunderstood. And I think Paul's trying to clean it up here. But it's been misunderstood for a long, long time. And I think we're still trying to unwind it all, the detail and what it was intended for.
It can't win the public debate, the policy, and we've sort of learnt that year on year.
Yep.
When Paul says, I don't know where the three strikes and the two strikes came from, well, it came from the AFL. Yep. It used to be that it was three strikes and you would be suspended, and then it was reduced to two strikes to modify behaviour.
Yep.
And Gil McLaughlin at the briefing 3 weeks ago said he challenged the notion that players hadn't modified behaviour on the reduction from three to two. So that's where that comes from. I think to say I don't know where it comes from is that's been the public face of the policy, and it looks like a disingenuous face.
Yeah, well, and I – going right back to – the very start, and I was a player of that generation when it came in. And looking back on it now, the word was aspirational. So I think some people still don't quite understand that there's the law that we abide by with police and the courts. Then there's the WADA ASADA drug testing that players, all athletes are, committed to.
Yep.
And then there is this policy that was aspirational, and it's a medical model, and it has just never quite been understood that way. And it's been a PR disaster because it was we're going to try and help our own and do what no organisation or government really around the world has been able to curtail any of that behaviour. And my worry for it is because this is we're dealing with the minority here of players with issues with it. So for the majority, because of the confidential nature of it, we were putting our trust. I hope this is helping players. I really do hope it's helping players because as a PR, it was a disaster. All we were attacked, and the stigma of illicit drug use is just a constant hum. They tested more than basketballers, tennis players. This is beyond what any other profession that I can think of has to, and we're still here, and there's still the stigma around it.
Should it remain?
The thing here is that I look at it from a different perspective. This is a voluntary program, and if we put our trust in and the people who are in charge and who are monitoring these figures, like people like Paul Marsh and the medical officers, they're saying it is helping. It is really helping players. if it's voluntary, if the attacks just keep coming and the confidentiality just seems to be quite brittle at times, I'm worried that the players just walk away from it. And so the PR goes, maybe it's good for PR, but those players that are actually being helped, then they won't be.
Yep.
And then what happens?
And what happened initially was when Carlton sacked two players who rolled up at the club. So that, do you go, if there's no policy, what does that look like? How do players deal with their own staff members who do this?
Yeah, it's the ripple effect is a real worry.
Victoria's taken another wicket at Drummoyne Oval, so the top order has collapsed for New South Wales. They're chasing 166 and a 4 for 22. So Daniel Hughes bowled Siddle for a duck, Nick Larkin, LBW, Pattinson for a duck, Moses Enriquez caught Gotch bowled Pattinson for a duck, Curtis Patterson caught Holland bowled Pattinson for 10. So James Pattinson, who's waited a long time for a moment like this again, 4 overs, 3 for 7. And threatening to bowl Victoria to what would be a thrilling victory. It would seal a home final is what's at stake for Victoria here if they're able to win outright and get that points break with one round to play. So they're on a good course, 4 for 22. We'll finish up with Bob Murphy shortly. Right now, the news headlines with Meredith Gibbs. As Sally texts this through at the start of the day, Bob, I held it back for when you arrived. My first reaction to the Bulldogs jumper was, ah. But then I took a moment and calmed down. Hawks won the premiership in the years where they had the Disco Power Rangers jumper, and Storm have had Marvel superhero jumpers multiple times and won flags. It's not a lack of respect for the jumper, and if the Bulldogs can be as successful as those clubs, then I'm sure they will take it. Should have had Chris Hemsworth model the Thor jumper. That was from Sally. I must admit, I spent most of yesterday thinking, oh, what a miserable bunch of killjoys we've become as the BBL had a silly round where they wore superhero shirts and the A-League had a Star Wars round, and I think the rugby leagues had both Marvel and DC, so they've crossed into both. And then you did stop me in my tracks last night because the jumper should matter.
Yeah, and if they had come to me and said, you know, what do you think? I would, it's not for me. But then that's to the heart of it. It's actually not for me. That it is for the kids. I got home after the show last night. What do you reckon the three kids wanted to talk about?
They want a Thor jumper.
They want the Thor jumper.
Yep.
And so, okay, well, there it is. And it also goes to, I was captain a few years ago, I would have sort of, I don't think so, you know, because it's a sacred, I see that as just sacred space that I wouldn't muck around with it. Easton Wood's a different captain. He's part of a younger generation. The playing group are like, yeah, right behind it. So this is changing times, and, you know, whilst I would be saying, oh, probably not, I accept it. And the idea of, you know, I'm not going to go to the footy or, you know,
yeah,
no, I'm not going that far.
It's so the jumper meant, you see footy spiritually, that's how you've been able to share it, and the jumper is stitched into that.
Yeah, it's the symbolism of footy is something I think a bit about. Jumper's one of those things. Song, singing the song in a circle, those things. So for instance, we wouldn't let the cameras inside the circle when we would sing the song, because that was that's a sacred space. So that's where I'm coming from. But I am coming from a long way back with this kind of thing. As you know, I'm a bit of a Luddite with this kind. I take a while to sort of come around. I take a while to thaw. Yeah.
As it were. The Suns, who you had a optimistic view for last year. So the journey is, they've reset themselves now, having not achieved anything over 8 years on the field. Tony Cochran, the chairman, who he's a vibrant figure. I think he's a really important figure for them. Sometimes you have to have someone who stands on the wall and
he's a fighter,
defends the territory. So he spoke with tremendous passion on 360 last night. But why will this time be any different in what they're trying to build?
You know, these things take time. I mean, you've only got to look at, say, Fremantle over it. Now, in a dead set, rock solid AFL city, it took them some time to get up and really get going. In a dead set AFL landscape, we don't have that. We started on the Gold Coast with very, 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 very small AFL influence. And we were up against the juggernaut in that part of the world of the NRL. So it's going to take time. And, you know, have we, the Royal We, the club, made mistakes? You bet. Absolutely. Have the AFL made mistakes in setting it up? You bet. Absolutely, in my opinion. Right? But to quote a good old mate of mine, Dick Johnson, a famous steerer, the only thing you get from looking back is a sore neck. So for us, let's focus on what's coming forward. Let's focus on the energy we're putting into these young people up there now in our club. You know, we've got a great list. You know, they're great young guys. We've got people that are really committed, that really want to be there now. We've got a sensational coach. And, I actually think we've got all the right parts. I said it before. If you get into this business, you've got to have the right people. And I really do believe we've got the right people.
So he's passionate for the cause, and they've tried to reset. As you can't,
yep.
You can't lurch on the way that they'd been lurching on. It's not right to say this is their last chance to build it, but they have to build it this time.
It has to. The wheels have been spinning for a while, haven't they? So it needs to. It needs to get some traction. It's how much time do we give, and what is traction? That's I think what we, because it's a great message, and he put it so eloquently and passionately that you feel it, don't you? Think, okay, this is a proper restart. It's almost a restart, isn't it?
Yep.
As much as anything. So it's, but that's at this time of, you know, that's pre round one, where you can be, you know, to steal another word from before, aspirational. But where's the limit? Where's the line of, okay, we've got to start seeing something. So that's their challenge. There'll be a sense of desperation up there, but hopefully that brings the best out of them.
And it's unlikely this year, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, they're going to have a really hard year on the field.
Yep.
For every reason that we understand.
Yep. So can we forecast, what do you think would be reasonable for the next, let's say 3 years?
Yeah, well.
Handful of wins next year? If
yeah,
that.
So how's it supposed to work? 3 wins, 6 wins, 10 wins?
Yeah.
And re-signing all the draftees
yep.
that you just brought in.
So this year it's don't even talk about wins and losses, is yep. it? It's spirit, retention, who they can get in. That's really it, isn't it?
Yep.
If David Swallow and Jared Woods can sort of consolidate this playing group.
My three kids, 10, 8 and 5, love the Marvel jumper, want the Tigers to get one. That's from Rob in Langwarrin.
There you go.
Cultural divide, or the generational divide. Generational. Bob, it's good to have you here.
Likewise, Jared.
It's Melbourne Membership Day. Show your support. Call 1-300-DEMONS. Sign up today and receive 2 bonus tickets and a cap. And Bob Murphy was here for Macca's. Grab a medium McCafe coffee and ham and cheese pocket for just $6 at Macca's.